You're listening to the Mens Rea podcast, and this is the story of the death of Tom O'Gorman. O'Gorman was born in Dublin in 1974. He had a brother, Paul, and a sister, Catherine, and the family grew up in a nice home in Castleknock. He was a friendly guy, into sports, and he was sociable. He was also deeply religious and ended up working as a researcher with the Iona Institute and as a reporter for the Irish Catholic. For those who don't know, the Iona Institute is a Roman Catholic organization that was founded by columnist David Quinn in 2007 and functions as a representative body for conservative Catholic viewpoints in the country. It publishes reports and lobbies the government on social and economic issues and has been involved in a number of controversies over the last 10 years. But this story isn't about the Iona Institute or my feelings about them. It's about Tom O'Gorman, an all-around nice guy who firmly believed in charity and generosity and trying to live a Christian life, according to the teachings of Jesus. One of the charities he was involved with was called Focolare. It was founded in 1943 in the midst of World War II. It can now be found in 194 countries worldwide and has a membership of all ages. The stated purpose of the organization is brotherhood and unity, with a particular interest in encouraging dialogue between people of different faiths and none in order to bring about further unity and peace. There is also an encouragement to scholarship and research relating to faith and unity within the group, and it also helps to connect people from different areas and cultures. It was through Focolare that Tom met Saverio Balente. Saverio was from Palermo in Sicily, Italy, and lived in Ireland on and off in 2002 and 2003, working as a waiter and in a band. Eventually, in 2011, he made the move permanently and took up a job in a call centre with Allergan, a pharmaceutical company based in Dublin city centre, and he ended up renting a room from Tom O'Gorman. Tom still lived in the home that he and his siblings had been raised in. The two men got on. They shared interests such as their faith, and they were both avid chess players. But at 1:50 a.m. on the 12th of January, 2014, Balente made a phone call to the emergency services. He told the dispatcher that his landlord was dead and that he had killed him. When he was asked by the dispatcher what had happened, Balente replied, quote, "I killed him. He doesn't respect rules," end quote. He told the emergency services that he was the only other occupant of the house, and he stayed on the line until Gardaí arrived at the home. When the police entered the house, they found Tom's body slumped in the living room. There was a large hole in his skull and a 10-centimeter gash in his chest. His internal organs were visible through the cut, and there was a pool of blood on the floor. There was a broken kitchen knife and a training weight next to his body. On the kitchen counter sat a plate with tissue from Tom's body on it. Saverio was immediately taken into Garda custody. Very quickly during his interviews with Gardaí, it became apparent that Balente was not a well man. He described the events that had led up to the killing of Tom. The two had been playing a game of chess that night. Balente had gotten angry at Tom when Balente moved his king. Of course, Saverio said it was Tom who had gotten angry because he was losing, but the argument seems to have been whether the move was in line with the rules of chess. Saverio said that Tom had called his move, quote, "stupid and perverse," end quote. The argument was heated enough that Saverio rang another mutual friend that the two men knew through Focolare, Brendan Gallagher, at 10:48 p.m. Brendan was at a charity event in Malahide Castle. The call went to his voicemail, and so Saverio left a message. He said, quote, "Hey pal, this is Saverio. I'm here with Tom. We are in trouble. We are fighting about something. If you can call back as soon as possible to help out," end quote. Brendan listened to the message at 11 p.m., as it was unusual for him to get a call at that time of night. But he figured it was too late to be making phone calls and thought to himself that he'd ring them back in the morning. Meanwhile, Saverio went outside to have a cigarette. It was at this point that ideas of good and evil crossed his mind. He wanted to talk to Tom about good and evil. When he came back inside, he decided to ask him about that and to ask if he could smoke in the house, because he normally wasn't allowed to. Tom said that he could smoke, and at that point, Saverio looked over and saw two peat briquettes in the fireplace. Okay, so sidebar for our American friends. Peat briquettes are a type of solid fuel burned here. It's taken from the bogs in the countryside and dried and compressed. It's a more commercial and processed type of turf. Anyway, Saverio saw these two briquettes and thought that they represented good and evil. One was him, and the other was Tom. He poured water over one of them to extinguish it and asked Tom if he would put out the other one, but Tom said no. Saverio said that he thought that if Tom would have put out the other briquette, that this would have ended the fight between good and evil. It was at this point that Saverio grabbed the knife, thinking that Tom was the devil, and he attacked him. Valente thought that if he had consumed some of Tom's heart, it would put an end to it all. He told the Gardaí that he hadn't planned to do this, but felt that it was important to do. When asked in his third interview by Gardaí about whether he had killed Tom, Saverio said, quote, "I just did what I believed I had to do," end quote. He said that he knew it was normally wrong to kill someone, but that wasn't true here. He needed to kill Tom and consume his heart, as it was, quote, "the only way to finish him," end quote. He then said that Tom was like the mafia and that there was a lack of freedom and that Tom was governed by a, quote, "political heart and head," end quote. Saverio Belente's trial for the murder of Tom O'Gorman came before the court at the end of July 2015. Appearing before Justice Margaret Hennigan, this trial was unusual, as both prosecution and defense were hoping that the jury of 7 men and 5 women would return the same verdict: not guilty by reason of insanity. Prosecution barrister Patrick Gageby, senior counsel, said that it was up to them to decide whether Saverio was suffering from a mental defect at the time of the killing, and whether, quote, "illness was in the driving seat," end quote. Saverio Belente sat listening to the proceedings with a translator to ensure as best was possible that he might understand the proceedings. The court heard that when Belente moved to Ireland in 2011, he had been engaged and treated by the mental health services here. He had been attending a clinic on Dublin's Baggot Street, not far from his workplace, every 2 months. At some point, a consultant psychologist told Belente that he could begin to gradually taper down his medication. This was despite his doctors in Italy indicating that Saverio should expect to remain on medication for his psychiatric problems for the rest of his life. 2 days before the killing, the antipsychotic that he was on, olanzapine, had been completely stopped. The reduction had begun in January 2012 and was stopped entirely in January 2014. He'd also been on sodium valproate, which is used to stabilize moods. Blood tests taken after his arrest and detention in Cloverhill Prison indicated that he had less sodium valproate in his system than he should have had. It was much lower than the amount generally used for therapeutic purposes, so it would seem that Saverio had been missing some of those doses. State pathologist Mary Cassidy gave evidence of the post-mortem on Tom's body. She said the cause of death had been blunt force trauma to the head and stab wounds to the head, neck, and chest. The blunt force trauma was likely caused by the dumbbell weight at the scene. There was a large area of his skull that had been visibly fractured and caved in. Mr. O'Gorman also had a large hole in his chest and had suffered stab wounds and had cuts on the back of his hands and on his elbow from the knife. Part of the lobe of his right lung had been, quote, crudely excised, end quote. There was also damage to his liver. There was brain matter left on the couch in the living room, and a lobe from a lung was found on a plate and a frying pan in the kitchen. There was also some small amounts of tissue found in the bin in the kitchen. She told the court that the wounds were catastrophic and that Mr. O'Gorman's death would have happened fairly quickly. Both the prosecution and the defense called psychiatric experts to give evidence at the trial. Both told the jury that Belente met the criteria for a verdict of not guilty by reason of insanity. Dr. Stephen Monks appeared for the prosecution. He had spoken to Belente about his family and medical history. He said that Belente had told him that there was no mental illness in his family and that he had a brother and a sister. He told the doctor that he had a primary degree in political science and international relations and held a master's degree as well. But Belente had said it took him 10 years to finish his primary degree, as he had been on medication to treat his mental illness and that it had affected his ability to concentrate. Belente had told Dr. Monks about the episode that led to his first hospitalization in 2005. He had had a breakdown the year before, and it involved excessive prayer. He had been diagnosed with mystical religious delirium. He thought that he was responsible for saving the world from evil. Belente said he would often see the devil. Belente would engage in behaviors identified by Dr. Marks as posturing, where Belente would sit in a circle, praying, or make the shape of a crucifix with his body. Marks told the court that this was a symptom associated with schizophrenia. Belente told Marks that in the days after he had been taken off his medication, he began to feel different and began interpreting things as either good or evil. He was like this all weekend and interpreted everything in this context, even down to a football match that he watched on TV, where one side was good and the other evil. He believed that he was the only one able to interpret these signs. Of Belente's actions the night of the killing of Tom, Dr. Monk said, quote, he was suffering from acute psychosis when he killed Mr. O'Gorman. He did not know the nature of the act he was carrying out. He thought what he was doing was right and completely justifiable, end quote. Gardee gave evidence that the defendant had admitted the killing from the very beginning of his detention and questioning in Blanchardstown Garda Station. There were only 2 days of evidence in the whole trial. In closing, Sean Guerin, senior counsel for Belente, addressed the jury and said that they had heard expert opinion of 2 doctors and that they were entitled to rely on the opinions expressed and to be guided by them in their decision. He said that there was no rational reason for the killing of Tom O'Gorman by his client. The whole incident could only be seen through the lens of insanity, and that Mr. Belente had suffered from mental illness for over a decade, but managed to function while on medication for that time. He reminded them that at the time of the attack, Belente's medication had been changed under doctor's supervision and that Belente bore no responsibility for that change. Patrick Gageby for the state did not deliver a closing statement. In the judge's summing up, Justice Hennigan told the jury that Mr. Belente had pled not guilty to the charge of murder and had put forward a defense to the charge that he was in fact insane at the time of the killing. She told the jury that it was up to the defense to prove that this was in fact the case, and that they must believe that Belente was insane on the balance of probabilities, rather than beyond a reasonable doubt, to find him not guilty by reason of insanity. She said that it was the defense's case that due to Belente's mental capacity at the time of the killing, he was not able to form the necessary intent, mens rea, required for the crime of murder. She stressed to them that if the jury found him not guilty but insane, it was an acquittal of murder, and that the defendant would be sent directly to the Central Mental Hospital. On the 31st of July, the jury retired. They deliberated for a total of 1 hour and 36 minutes before returning with their verdict, They asked the judge if they might express an opinion on the verdict, but this was denied by the trial judge, as it was not the jury's place to do so. Saverio Belente was found not guilty of the murder of Tom O'Connell by reason of insanity. The jury were thanked for their service, and Justice Hennigan said that they had adjudicated a particularly difficult case. Belente was committed to the Central Mental Hospital, and a date was set to hear from Dr. Damien Mohan regarding Belente's current psychological state. On the 12th of August 2015, that hearing took place in the Central Criminal Court. At this hearing, Tom's sister, Catherine, told the court about her brother, reminding them that he was a gentle person who loved life and was honest and empathetic. He was a man whose faith meant a lot to him, and he had plans for his life. He had been thinking about moving to America and continuing his studies with a PhD. He was sociable and enjoyed talking to people. He loved sports, especially rugby. She and her two brothers were close and had found comfort in one another after their mother's death in 2012. The court then heard from Dr. Damien Mohan. He told the court that he had been treating Mr. Belente for most of 2014 and had seen him every week that year so far. He said that Mr. Belente was now in the rehabilitation phase of his illness, but the acute phase had lasted for a very long time indeed. Initially, even high doses of medication had had no effect, and Belente continued to believe that Tom had been some sort of evil force, and he was compelled to kill him and consume what he thought was his heart. Mohan said that it was a number of months before this improved at all, but in late 2014, early 2015, Belente did manage to get some understanding of what he had done. He had begun expressing his deep remorse and had done so on a number of occasions. Dr. Mohan went on to say that although the delusions caused by Belente's paranoid schizophrenia had abated, that he was still a risk and that Belente was aware and accepting of that fact, and the fact that he would have to receive treatment and medication for his condition for the rest of his life. Mohan said, quote, "Having extensive knowledge of his case and full access to his file, and having reviewed him since the jury returned the verdict on July 31st, I'm satisfied that he still suffers from a mental illness and disorder which affects a person's thinking and perceiving and emotion and requires medical treatment in his own best interests." Ms. Justice Margaret Hennigan then said, quote, "I am satisfied it is appropriate to make an order committing Mr. Belente to a designated center, which is the Central Mental Hospital, for inpatient care," end quote. However, the family of Tom O'Gorman were not happy with the two-day trial and felt that it did not fully investigate the causes of their brother's death. The trial had not been a full criminal trial, they said. Rather, the matter in question was really whether or not the killing had been an act of insanity. The inquest into Mr. O'Gorman's death had initially opened on March 26, 2014, but it was adjourned due to the murder investigation and subsequent trial. The family of Tom called to have the inquest into their brother's death reopened. After hearing applications on behalf of the O'Gorman family, Dublin City Coroner Dr. Brian Farrell said that there were reasons for the inquest to be held. Some matters that didn't feature in the two-day trial warranted further examination, he said. There has yet to be any reports of the inquest being held. Meanwhile, Belente and his family served the health service executive, the HSE, and a named psychiatrist with a personal injury summons. It expired, however, in June 2017. With the inquest outstanding, Belente's legal team said that they weren't able to deliver the particulars, the specific claims, that is, of their case. They applied to the High Court for an extension due to these extenuating circumstances, but Mr. Justice Richard Humphreys said that they had presented no good reason to allow further extension in the case. He pointed out that the summons itself ran 19 pages long and doubted that the matter could not be particularized prior to the inquest, which of course would not be concerned with the issues of legal liability. The issue was open to appeal, but there have been no further reports in the media about the progress of that suit. Saverio Belente is said to be doing well in his treatment. He is still a resident of the Central Mental Hospital and may already be allowed out on day release. Most recent reports say that he could even be released entirely this year. If that were to happen, he would likely be obliged to leave the country. So this episode is a good example of the insanity defense working in the Irish court system, although the two-day trial that was basically only procedural made the whole thing more of a fait accompli. It's reasonably similar to the Vincent Lee case in Canada, where he had a psychotic episode on a Greyhound bus, though of course the whole thing was rather less public. Incidentally, the murder happened the night that Rory O'Neill appeared on the Brendan O'Connor show and sparked Pantygate. It was the first time that the Iona Institute was really thrust into the media and made news headlines. It had been relatively quiet as an organization up until that point, and was that week thrust into the papers, both due to the awful murder and the threatened lawsuits. Thank you for listening to Mens Rea, a true crime podcast. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Mens Rea Pod, or you can send an email to mensreapod@gmail.com. This podcast is made possible in part from generous donations by supporters on Patreon. Please do check it out at patreon.com/mensreapod. Our theme music is Quinn's Song, The Dance Begins by Kevin MacLeod. Additional music is by Juanita Meisel and Kevin MacLeod. This episode was researched and written by me, your host, Sinead. All sources for today's episode can be found in the show notes or on our website, www.mensreapod.com. And so, till next time, don't do anything I wouldn't do.